I'm Tim Capper, and I'm the next QB on the IR, and this is AFL Tonight, ArenaFan.com's weekly look at everything arena football. Well, welcome to this week's edition. We have Andy with us again this week. Welcome, Andy.
Thank you.
Adam is still on the love boat this week, or is just back from the love boat, and I'm sure he'll be able to explain it. I think he will be back next week. But again, Andy, always, anytime you want to come. We love having you. So, interesting things. I mean, I don't know where we talked about the quarterbacks last week and all, but it looks like, Andy, this league, and I don't know if this is to do of the 18-game schedule, you can say what it is, for whatever it is, we had some major injuries again come up, and this is for three teams, well, two teams that are really in playoff contention, one that is sort of on the rise. You know, we had Morris in Pittsburgh, Mikna in Chicago, and Moyer in Spokane all go down with injuries. And right now it seems to be the worst of them all is Russ Mikna, because obviously he was placed on the injured reserve list. What do you think? I mean, we really can't say it's 18 games. We're not even close to being that. But, I mean, the league, I think, if I'm not mistaken, the league added an extra player for their roster. Does the league need to add somebody else to the roster? Do they need to have a spot specifically for quarterbacks? Or is it right now just the game that's causing these?
Well, I mean, you know, the last time that they had a third quarterback was that year that that Tampa Bay won the Arena Bowl, and Cliff Dell, a receiver, was listed as the backup so that they could, you know, steal the player in there. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that really was the end of it, because, you know, all these other teams did it. So I don't think that you do it as an extra quarterback, because that's what's going to happen. And, I mean, it's going to benefit a lot of great teams. Like Tulsa is going to really benefit because they have a great running quarterback, you know, to go along with Justin Allgood. So, you know, then they can, you know, have another person they can put in there and just hide it, even if it's going to be a third quarterback that's only inactive. So I really think that it is a whole injury thing, really, for this year. The extra games, yes, they're going to hurt, but guess what? It's week 16 this week.
I know.
You know, last year there were still 18 weeks of football, so there were still two more weeks before it happened here. You have expanded, which is making the talent pool smaller. And yes, there's some great receivers, great everything, but the one thing that really is the backbone of this league, and that no one really ever talks about, is linemen, specifically offensive linemen. And that's one of the reasons, like, you're seeing a San Jose team that has lost six in a row.
Yep.
A majority of that is going to be because it's going to be up front. And if you can't protect up front, your guys are going to go down.
And then you have a Jacksonville team, which has won 12 in a row, and look how well protected an injury-prone Aaron Garcia is doing this year.
Exactly. Absolutely. I mean, you saw it with Spokane. They lost a lot of, you know, really, really good linemen, either not playing this year or, you know, went to another team, and, you know, they got hurt. Now, that didn't really help in the beginning. They had some other issues, but they've went through a series of quarterbacks. These other teams are going through a series of quarterbacks. And I feel it's really because there is a lack of great offensive linemen out there. Because, I mean, you're seeing sacks are up. Mm-hmm. I mean, for God's sakes, the league leader is a linebacker. That's never happened in this league's history. And he's going to break the league record likely before we get to 16 actual games played for Tampa Bay.
Now, it makes me wonder how many actual, someone will talk about it a little bit later, but, you know, how many actual records are going to be shattered this year just because of the 18 games. But, you know, you look at the teams that have quarterbacks where they have, that are healthy. You look at Arizona, they are in first place. They've already clinched a playoff spot. They've clinched the division. You look at Jacksonville. Yeah, I know. So it's a lot of these teams that have had quarterback issues, they're either hovering above 500 or they're just totally out of it. You know, as an example, you know, for Morris in Pittsburgh, this would be the second time that he's hurt, but before we started the show tonight, I did see that it looks like Coach Siegfried is planning on having more start this week versus Milwaukee. And considering that they are still tied with Cleveland, record-wise, I think that's something that they need to have. I think they need to have Morris under center. I mean, they did sign a backup, and just like these other teams did. You know, Spokane, with Meyer going down, Kyle Rowley has just come off activated Kyle Rowley and Bill Stull. So, I don't know. We're going to have to see if it makes a really big difference. I mean, who knows? Kyle Rowley maybe being humbled the way that he has this year will spark this team. I don't know. The situation, though, in Chicago is a little bit more interesting, though. You know, this year's most probably traded quarterback, J.J. Raderink. Remember, at first he was going to be traded for Justin Allgood. He was actually traded over to Chicago, so he heads back to Chicago. Not Cotton, but remember, Coach Ho is not there, so he's heading back to Chicago. And the funny thing was, for a major starting quarterback, a starting quarterback for a team to be traded for pass considerations. I thought that was very, very interesting, to say the least. I mean, now we know he's going to start because he knows the system. I don't know how much has actually changed from what Coach Ho brought with him to what Coach McMillan is currently running. But it's a good guess that he's going to be starting this week.
Absolutely, he will. Absolutely, he will. The biggest thing that I see when you look at his numbers, I mean, he has a rating of over 100. He's still completing over 60% of his passes. He's got, you know, he's almost averaging 300 yards a game. It's those interceptions. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be interesting being in that system if he is going to be any better at it.
What is going to happen with the, you know, I'm sure McNair he's been able to have a great rapport with his, you know, with his receivers. I mean, Reggie Gray specifically, you know, Charles Dillon, you know, you think it's going to change much? Or are they going to, I mean, is it just a matter now of stop me or intercept me type of thing?
I think it's going to be more of that stop me, intercept me thing. I think if, assuming that he's going to be under center over Randolph, who played decently, mm-hmm. He could have played better, but he, you know, McNair was obviously better at the time until he got hurt. And who knows? I have no clue what they're actually going to do in Chicago, but you know, they're so close to get either going from what is going to be a 2 seed to a 3 seed, so.
Can be very,
very important.
True, and it can also be very helpful, considering that their schedule can be very helpful to them, considering they got Iowa, Utah, Georgia, and Dallas coming up. Iowa, okay. Can't hurt for their first game. Utah, Jekyll and Hyde team. Georgia and Dallas, you know, if they can come out of this 2-2, they, with McNair coming back, you know, he'll be back at least for, I think, first week of the playoffs, am I guessing right? Have I done my math properly?
He'd be ready for the Milwaukee game. He'd be out for 4 games.
Yeah. Yeah, he would be back for Milwaukee. And I think it was concussion, I think, that he put him on the IR for, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, not the ankle.
No, not the ankle. I heard concussion, so. What do you think about the J.J. Raddering thing? I mean, he seems to be the quarterback of choice this year to be traded.
I don't really understand what Kansas City did there. Yeah, they had a good performance by Wassell, but I mean that was one performance. I know that they weren't happy with what J.J. was doing there, but still, you know, he is still a name player for them. They're having a horrible season, terrible attendance, and to send who legitimately was your star player for pass considerations for Todd DeVoe, who not really even doing anything for them either.
No, he's done nothing. But they still do have 4 receivers over 10 touchdowns.
Now, 10 touchdowns is not that important, that impressive
no,
in this
know.
League.
I know, but it's. I mean, maybe it is the I don't know if it's inconsistency or if it is because of the interceptions. You know, Roderick only has 3,700 yards.
Yeah. So. Yeah, and don't forget, they beat Cleveland. Cleveland's one of those teams where you have no clue. Without John Dutton, this team is – I'm surprised they are where they're at.
Yeah.
I'm surprised they are where they're at. They don't score. If they don't score, they cannot win. I mean, every one of their losses, they've scored less than 42 points.
Yep. So I don't know. It'll be interesting to see. I mean, as I said, it's been a bad year in Kansas City, especially for the first year back. But I don't know. As I said, JJ just seemed to be the quarterback du jour this year. So I don't know. The league was pushing. I don't think they've had PRs in years past concerning this, but I don't think that's one that's ever led up to this. They're actually pushing this year, Andy, about the league is about to reach their 1,000,000th fan for this year. You know, and I think our numbers that we have in this, the arena fan system are just a tad off from what they had. And their PR, I mean, just slightly off, maybe by about 1,000 or so. But either way, the average is about what it is at. But what a lot of, you know, I applaud the league for pushing this, and they are going to reach 1,000 fans for the umpteenth time since 1996. You know, it's consecutive years, less the dark year. But what people don't understand is that, you know, with last year's, we had less teams last year. Attendance is actually, the average attendance is actually lower.
Well, I mean, not only that, I've said it in my article, and I know that certain people at the league office don't like when I talk about attendance, but it's not for me to be negative. It's to me to say that, you know, you got to go out there and you got to do this. For me, being in this league forever, I think the biggest difference between this league and the previous AFL is the fact that the league, from a league standpoint and from a team standpoint, is not spending enough money on marketing and also on public relations. They're just hiring people off the streets. Certain teams have great PR. Evan's a great PR guy for the league as well. Even though he's relatively new, but they still don't have other things. Like, he needs more people there in Tulsa helping him to promote this league more. And, you know, average attendance is still down by almost 400 per game from last year. And last year's attendance was down by 4,000 per game from the previous year, which was the best year, 2008. You know, as much as everyone will blame David Baker for the demise of the league, that was by far the best season as far as average attendance. I mean, almost 13,000 per game came in there. Now, overall attendance was actually lower, but they had less teams in the previous year, which was the only year they went over 2 million.
Exactly.
And last year they went over by a million by just 34,000, which, you know, I mean, yeah, we lost a couple of teams that were really bad, and some teams increased, like Utah has done the best job from year one of the reboot of the AFL to the year two, and you know, obviously it helps when you're a winning team, and this year a lot of the teams that have the poor attendance are those teams that are not very good, and you know, I see why the league would promote it. I mean, I would too. If I was in the position, it's 15 straight years.
Exactly.
And you have it, and you have over, you know, what right now, 26 million people that have come and done arena football. I mean, last year they only made that over that million when it came into the playoffs.
Good point. Yeah.
You know, they just got to work out at the end, just like when we were talking last week about New Orleans getting the Arena Bowl. I don't think a team that's 10th in the league in attendance should have that. You have to be rewarded for it. So you look at it, you say, okay, Tampa, Orlando, Jacksonville, you know, Spokane, these are the, you know, cities that draw. They're the ones that get it. And if you want to, if Milwaukee, you want to do it, guess what? You got to get some more butts in the seats. And I'm not just saying announced attendance.
Real.
You have to really go out there.
Yeah, exactly.
And you know, congrats. You know, it's great. It's great that the last 2 years, over 2 million people have come and seen arena football. And, you know, a lot of those are new people that didn't get to see it in 2009. But You know,
well, I mean, true, but it's also a little disconcerting as you're talking about it. It's approximately between 300 and 400 less from 2010. Our current average, at least that we have listed, about 7,800, is actually the second lowest average since the barnstorming season back in 89. That
yeah.
season had had approximately 6,229. It's a little disconcerting because then you have 2010. Which it was 8,100, average 8,100, and then you have 88, 1988, which I think was, I can't even read my writing, which was 8,800.
Yeah.
So, you know, this is a far cry from the days where we were averaging 10, 11, 12, 13,000.
Well, the one thing you got to think about is you've lost a lot of really strong markets like in Los Angeles. That was a really, really strong market. And it's harder to get the foothold back into markets like Arizona, which is down from their 08 averages, even New Orleans. And, San Jose as well.
I mean, I'm very surprised at San Jose.
Well, San Jose also had a lot of games early in the season where, you know, around here, because that's where I live, it's really all about the Sharks around here at this point in time.
True.
And, you know, I have to say the marketing was better here than most places because, I mean, the Sabercats are the only team that every single road game is televised locally, you know, in high-definition television. So, people get to see it. And then the team hasn't had great games this year in the last 6 weeks.
Well,
so
who would have thought, that we would say that they've lost six straight? It just floors me to say that about a Darren Arbett coach team. So
well, again, it's all they have a lot of injuries, and they have a lot of newer players there. So I mean, it's Grebe and a whole bunch of other guys.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, is there anything that besides marketing? Because I will admit, I find that the marketing, they've done well with what they could do, but the league has never been really strong when it came to marketing. And we're talking about attendances too. We've talked about cities that we've lost. Come on, you really can't tell me that people did not go to the Philadelphia games just for by chance to get to have a Bon Jovi sighting or Denver to see Elway. You know, we still have Ditka over in Chicago.
Well, I mean, I think your thing is that you have player salaries that have gone from. Some guy that the league liked to back in the day, they liked to say that it was $85,000 was the average that the player was paid because of all the other benefits that was in there, which is about right. You know, I mean, I did football operations, but the minimum player salary when I left was a little bit under $30,000 just for salary,
and
without any other benefits.
And 80%, if I'm not mistaken, by the CBA, 82% had to be spent on salaries, right?
There's a certain amount. It had nothing to do with that. You had to spend 82% of whatever your salary cap was.
There we go. Okay, good. Okay.
You had to spend 85%, whatever it was.
Okay.
Everyone has the same amount of salary cap, and then it just changes with what you have for other things. I can talk about the old cap in detail all day long. but, when you're going to now where you're going to have player salaries from $400 to $1,000 per game, when back then – the entry level player was making more than $1,000 per game. You know, you're going to see that. Hey, if I'm only going to play Mark Grebe $1,000 a game, which is going to end up being $18,000 for the year, why do I have to go pay my PR guy, $30,000 for a year, or $15,000 even, or any of this money? It's like, well, no, I'll pay him $10 an hour, and that's what he's going to get. And then the same thing with marketing, because PR and marketing. When I was in Grand Rapids, they broke it down, and we had meetings all the time. And it was like, these are the salespeople. These are the people that make the money. These are the people who get more money as far as, their own personal thing. And then we have at a table, me and the marketing guy and the game operations guy. It's like, here's the guys who you're important, but you're not that important. And now they're not spending that. And I the league had made a huge strides from last year. From NPR to this year, and hopefully they continue to do that year by year, but they're going to have to quickly get more and more. And hopefully there's a lot of people who want to live in Tulsa, Oklahoma. And then the same thing goes on with a lot of teams. I mean, I know San Diego, I mean, San Jose is doing their money as far as marketing here. I see their commercials all the time. I hear their radio spots all the time. I know that they're still strong the way they had it there.
Right.
There's just other things here that, you know, and the team isn't obviously performing as well on the field. And they've had poor games. Friday nights are horrible in the Bay Area. And they've had a lot of Friday night games. Most of their home games so far have been on Friday nights. They've had one Saturday night game. Everything else has been on a Friday. And all those have been poorly attended. The one Saturday game was actually their best attendance game of the year. And they have another Friday game when they play Jacksonville, and then they end against Orlando on a Saturday, and I expect that game to be sold out, even if the team's already out of the playoffs because it's their last game. And I think that's what you're going to start seeing in other markets that are stronger markets. They're going to start doing that. And from what I understand, like in Tampa, this year, obviously, the loss of Markham mm-hmm. and the team starting off so poorly
true.
Really hurt them. But from what I gather, that the new ownership they have there and, you know, having Derek Brooks – that things are drastically going to be changing in next year, and you're going to see them. I guarantee you Tampa will lead the league in attendance, not only announced attendance, but actually paid turnstile attendance.
Yeah, I was about to say.
That's going
to
happen.
Because everybody jokes. Everybody jokes about the papering. I know we've talked, I think Adam and I have talked about that before in weeks past.
And we talked about that last week.
That's true,
I don't
man.
Care if you – how many teams have failed in this league and in the AF2? How many teams – most teams fail.
Yeah,
and to have a team that's lasted 20 years and have been top in the league in attendance for most of those years, even if you're papering, it's not like Bob Greaves or any of these other, you know, Woody Kern are in there to lose money.
Yeah,
they're doing something. They're doing something, whatever it is.
Yeah,
and they're surviving.
Well, there are,
that's what's happening with the strong teams.
Well, they're able to survive also. It, you know, it's based on name. It's based on – yeah, I agree. You know, and
I mean, the Nashville Cats didn't survive.
No.
They tried it twice.
Yeah.
They had the name brand, and they had celebrity owners both times.
Celebrity owners, yeah, it's true. But it just seemed to be that the NFL owners sort of – you know, it was the hot market thing to do to buy into a team. Look how many NFL owners we have left. Technically one. Technically, in Chicago, I guess we could say.
Yeah, but he doesn't have anything to do with the NFL team.
No, I know, but I don't know, it's...
And you don't know what percentage that Ditka really has in that.
No, that's true.
That team, too. I mean, but he's always been a huge arena football fan. He, you know, when he originally was going to be part of the original ownership in 2001, where he actually didn't, I remember being in Tampa, we had the Super Bowl, and then that's when they announced it. And the league got mad at me because I had Storm stuff all over the place. I was like, hey, I'm promoting my team.
Jeez.
Hey, you got to do what you got to do.
I right? know, no, I agree. I totally agree with you, dude.
Super Bowl's in my hometown. We're going to promote the Storm.
Now, do you,
but go ahead.
No, I was going to say, what do you think? I mean, do you think can the league get over 8,000? For the average for the year, I don't see them being the second lowest in league history. It may end up being the third lowest in league history, but
I don't think it's going to happen this year. I think that the teams that are the weak teams are just going to continue to be weak.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I think it'll just be better next year. I think we'll have a lot, hopefully a lot stronger. Hopefully the league doesn't just keep on saying we want to expand. I mean. You've had 24 years of the Arena Football League, and there's been either an expansion or extraction or, I mean, contraction, an expansion, a contraction, or a team has moved in every single year. So,
well, remember
you know,
that,
let's get some stability one year.
No, and remember, it's always been that magical number of 20 teams has never come to fruition. Never, no matter how many times it's been talked about. But we're still talking about San Antonio. I don't know what we'll have to see what happens. You know, we're only going to find out about the new teams at Arena Bowl, anyways.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if somehow, you know, the more and more I read about it, that you see like, you know, Cleveland moving to Miami, which I think is the worst thing in the world.
Please, Scott, we don't need another team in Miami. We don't need another team in Florida. We don't need another team in Florida.
You always need more teams in Florida, my friend. You always need more. That's where the attendance is, apparently.
Apparently. Why don't we might as well go ahead and put a team back in where did the Florida Bobcats play out of?
Well, that's still in the Miami area. We could bring back the Florida Firecats.
They want an
arena cup.
Yeah, but Fort
Myers needs another team.
I think they're getting this as a team in one of the other alphabet leagues. They can, from what I understand, that people are not too happy with the if it is the same owners. Anyways, that's attendance. Yes, I think it needs to. Hopefully, I'm hoping that it will increase. More marketing. The team has done a lot better this year. At least you have some ads for the league website on the NFL Network broadcast, which is cool.
I think there should be more. I mean, I watched the NFL draft and did nothing.
Of course not.
You know, I watched the NFL's draft on Saturday. The reason why Friday night, the reason why we didn't have Arena Bowl Friday night was the 100 greatest players of 2010 in the NFL, and not a single thing, you know, really promoting the next game, and I just didn't get it.
It's like they only advertise during that 3-hour block on Friday.
Yeah, or when they're doing their live show, they'll do it in the live show, which is good because I mean people are watching during that time. But it seems like it's the same kind of stale, boring commercial. I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm very happy that the league has a national outlet. I just wish it was in a national outlet that most of the country had, and this one doesn't.
No, that is true. That's in. I mean,
you know.
I mean, does Rich Eisen? I mean, I remember you talk about Rich Eisen, and you talk about Al. Here's a name: Al Troutwig. Al Troutwig actually, mind you, he was doing the pregame halftime and whatnot. When I listen to Rich Eisen do the halftime thing, or right before he's about to introduce the game that's about to come on, it just seems so insincere.
Yeah, I mean, he seems like an insincere guy in a lot of times, but I think that's because it's part of his humor. But like last year during the Arena Bowl, it was really, really bad. I'd heard that there was going to be like a half hour promo about the Arena Bowl, and like Ari Wolf and Kurt Warner and Burmeister were all going to be there, and they were to talk about the game. And what you got a half hour ahead of time, it was Kurt Warner and Burmeister on the field. And they talked more about the Arizona Cardinals than they talked about the actual game.
I remember, yeah.
And, I mean, I ripped them in my story, and it's just like, really? You know, you're trying to promote this league. I know that you're NFL 100% of the time, but try to promote the goddamn sport, you know? Mm-hmm. We need the sport to be promoted.
That's true. I wish we had the Al Troutwig. So, I mean, I'm sure Al's doing right now is swimming in gymnastics for NBC.
No, it'd be great to have more Ari Wolf. I mean, I would love to have Fran Charles any day.
Yeah, I totally agree. I totally agree with you on that one.
You know, I mean, he loves the sport, and he has a great voice. I mean, I don't agree with him when he says that Aaron Garcia is the greatest quarterback to play the game, but other than that, I'll take him any day.
Oh, yeah, and Anthony Heron too. He knows exactly what he's talking about.
No, I mean, I'd like to see some more Kurt Warner, too.
Oh, I think Kurt's only going to do one or two a year. He's doing most of the stuff anyways the NFL show, whatever, I can't remember the name of it now, but that we're talking about it. But anyways, but what would you do? We're talking about marketing and whatnot. What else can this league do? I mean, yes.
Well, I like the cross promotion that they're going to be doing this weekend with the New Orleans Voodoo car.
Mm-hmm.
You know, hopefully the driver actually he goes and finishes and has a really, really strong performance. But again, that's us promoting at another sport. It just you wouldn't see the NBA promoting itself with a shoulder patch on, LeBron James's jersey. I mean, that's what it is.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember in 2001, the Arena Football League was going to have a car in the Daytona 500 because one of the drivers didn't have anything. But then he got a sponsor at the last second. But it was going to be an AFL car, and it was just going to be the Shield. So, I mean, I just don't know, you know, having a voodoo thing on it, and if that design is actually the best to really promote the league.
Well, you have the Voodoo logo, and obviously you do have the league logo on there too. So, I mean,
yeah.
I think one of the positives, which I have actually seen, this doesn't have to really do with television, but it is a positive promotion, is the league actually now has some league logo merchandise available to sell in their at their store.
Yeah, I mean, that is nice, too. You know, I also think that we should have some more of those here at the on ArenaFan.com. We should sell some more ArenaFan.com merchandise here. I know you can go to the shop and buy those, but, you know, that's a pretty sweet logo there.
Yeah. I know.
Hey, that's a little self-promotion there.
Yeah, exactly. Sometimes you got to do it, right?
Hey.
One real quick question to you, Andy, because we'll quickly go over last week's scores, and then we'll get to your very interesting column when it came to the Hall of Fame finalists, because they were announced this past week on the NFL Network, Arena Football Friday. We're going to go back to it real quickly, because since we have gotten – it's become a topic of choice so far in the message boards. Back to the neutral site real quickly. The neutral site Arena Bowl. What does the league, so we're talking about promotion, what does the league need to do in order to do a neutral site game correctly? And these are the points that I brought up. Everybody is saying, you're just seeing AF2 again. Everybody's saying, well, look what happened in Bossier City. Look what happened in Puerto Rico. Okay? First of all, Puerto Rico is one of the worst things that the league could have ever done. Arena football, period. And Bossier. The only problem with the neutral site games in the AF2 is that they were promoted, a month in advance? You'd be able to have, I think it was about a month in advance. With the Arena Bowl, you have them you'll have at least at the beginning of the season. That way, everybody can make their plans to be able to go. You know, what else can the league do to get this thing to? Or is it just you think it's just going to be a complete failure and they should just go back?
No, I don't think it is. I know there's a lot of people that think that it should be, you know, just for the home team. And, you know, when your team's great, you know, and has the best record, that's fantastic. You know, if you're a Jacksonville fan right now, or if you're an Arizona Rattlers fan right now, it's good times.
Mm-hmm.
However, you know, like, I won't be able to go to any of them unless San Jose's there.
Right.
And I'd love to go. I don't have the time to go to one of these. But if I would have known ahead of time, hey, it's going to be in Chicago this year, I would do it.
Yeah.
I think that at least until the league builds itself back up to where it was even in like 2008 kind of status,
mm-hmm.
you have to do it in more of like destination type cities.
Mm-hmm.
Cities that have easy ways to get to. And in easy ways to get to are a Phoenix.
Yes.
A Chicago,
yes.
A Dallas,
yes. Florida.
I mean, any of the three teams in Florida.
Yeah.
Not really Jacksonville's kind of a little bit harder to get to as far as because it's a smaller airport. It's probably going to cost more money. Atlanta's that way. But, you know, the numbers for the Georgia Force are terrible. And if you do it there, you have to do it at the downtown arena. I don't think you can't take it an hour outside of Atlanta. That's just silly.
Yeah, it wouldn't be worse with the attendance either.
You know, the couple games that I did against the Force, it was in downtown, which was great. We were like across the street from there. You know, I got to tour CNN. It was pretty cool.
Yeah.
But we did a AFL University at Flowery Ranch, which is right outside of their facility.
I remember this.
And it was just in the middle of nowhere, and it took like an hour, and it was like, oh my god, how long is this trip? It was just horrible. New Orleans, I don't think it's the easiest to get to as far as like cheap flights. Like you can get, you know, Phoenix is a hub, Chicago's a hub, Dallas is a hub, Atlanta's a hub, Orlando is a mini hub.
I think
Philadelphia.
I think
getting to San Jose is easy.
I think as long as you can get onto Southwest, if you have the access to Southwest, most places are dirt cheap to get
true.
To.
True. I just hate the fact that for three straight neutral sites, you're going to give it to the same city.
I know.
I think that's ridiculous.
I didn't mention that, yeah.
You know, and here you got a city that they can draw 17,000, and their biggest attendance this year is half that. That's their building. Their building is 17,000. They are drawing half that right now.
Yeah.
That tells me that that team can't promote itself.
Could be the owner. Very easily the owner.
You know, I mean, I personally think it's because the Saints aren't there. From what I understand and from my connections with the previous Voodoo/Saints is, oh, you wanted to have an interview with Reggie Bush? Huh. Andy Kelly's ready for his interview as well.
Oh, okay.
You got what I'm saying?
In the off season,
you know, Reggie Bush might not be in town. But when he is in town and you want to come see him and you want to do anything with the Saints, you got to do something with the Voodoo. That's how they got a lot of their attendance, too, because they forced the media to do stuff, which is a fantastic thing to do.
That's a very, very...
And
that's
I don't
imaginative.
Know,
that is very imaginative.
And I assume that's probably why Dallas had great attendance, Georgia had great attendance. You know, and anyone needed to talk to Elway, guess what?
Yep.
You got to promote it. You know, same thing once Bon Jovi was an owner, you notice everything he did nationally, he was wearing a Philadelphia Soul jersey. This year I landed in Philly to go do some basketball. Landed, there's a little sports bar. What do I see up there? I see a signed Bon Jovi Philadelphia Soul jersey.
Cool.
The second I land, it's like I'll do anything you want, but guess what? It better say the Philadelphia Soul on it. I mean,
yeah,
you hate him or love him.
Yeah,
he did love the sport, and he still loves the sport.
It's true. He did wear the jerseys during the concerts. I think he made a small line that he incorporated with his concerts. So yeah, I'll agree. It's very rare that you can see a.
He was on American Idol and wore a Philadelphia Soul shirt.
Yep.
You know, the real world, when they were there, they did stuff for the Philadelphia Soul. I mean, you know, he was a very positive influence for the league, more so than, I would say, any of the other celebrity owners or NFL owners. He actually loved the sport. I mean, you know, you saw the passion when he did the double fingers at people.
Hilarious, yes.
He loved his team. I mean, that's something that you or I would have done because, you know, the ref screwed up. You know, you saw that also with Tim McGraw. I got pictures of Tim McGraw yelling at the refs at a game. You know, because he loves the sport.
I wish every team could have something like that. Maybe the league would be above and beyond what it currently is now. You know, I've not ripped on the league hard as much as I did last year. It's just
well, last year was very deserving in many ways, but you know, I mean, just remember it was a startup again. I mean, hell, if you email Jerry Kurz, his email address isn't at arenafootball.com, it's at arenafootball1.com.
Yeah, that's true. A lot of them are.
All of them are.
Yeah.
Even Evan, who was hired in like January.
Yeah, that's true.
It's like, really? It takes 2 seconds to go change that. I can show you how to do it.
Unless it forwards. But anyway, that's...
Even if it forwards, you can still be like, no, that website's dead.
Yeah.
We're changing everything over.
What I saw something, and we talked about replay, and I don't mean to harp on this, but I saw this week. Do these refs know what they're talking about? Do they know the rules?
I honestly don't know.
Because
I've seen them go both ways on it. I know that Carl Pagnelli is in charge of overall supervisor officials, but not having the actual NFL watch them every single time. And I mean, even you saw last year in the NFL when their head of referees left and he actually started with Fox, that the NFL officiating went down because he was, you know, he was strict. He told you what it needed to be, and he even pushed that down to the AFL level because guess what? A good portion of these guys, 5, 10, 15 years from now, are going to be reffing NFL games.
I just don't know how you can allow a replay And then we're talking about the town, obviously, since this was the only NFL game and network game last week, the war on I-4. How can you allow, how can the referees allow a replay to occur when I think they're using their third replay of the game, which technically, according to the rules, is illegal. You only have one per half. Which could easily have been a turning point. Even at the end of the game, too. You know, Coach O'Hara wanted to call one to check, you know, where it was a huge turning point. Because you got to admit, the returner, I'm trying to remember who the returner was stopped up against the wall. He was pushed up against the wall, but yet the clock still ran. Coach O'Hara was trying to do a replay, but he couldn't because he had no timeouts. So it's... just a little, I don't know, just a rant when it comes
I don't think if you read the Arena Fan Bill of Rights, instant replay for one game only is against the rules. If you read it, because it's about fairness. Mm-hmm. How is that fair that Tampa and Orlando got one when San Jose would have won the game this last week if they were allowed one replay when the fan interference happened?
That's true.
At the end of the game. If they allow that happen, they score on that one, which was a possession they didn't score on. They probably end up winning that game because that was one of the momentum turners. Last year when Tampa and Jacksonville played in Tampa, Jacksonville won by 2 points, and fan interference, which we put on because I had a picture of it, we put it on the main page, and Adam wrote a whole article about fan interference. Like, this is just...
yeah,
horrible.
Last year, fan interference.
You know,
that
kid was a Storm fan, and he was crying. And Jim, the PR director for the Storm, did the exact right thing. He went down. He had somebody go down there, gave that kid a ball, and actually moved him so he didn't get booed at. And because he was crying, I mean, it was horrible. This kid, and Markham and everyone went up to him after the next possession, was like, "Hey, it's okay, it's okay, it's okay." And they did the right thing for an organization, but, you know, because you're trying to get the ball. I mean, I've caught 2 balls in my career as a fan, you know, and it's such an exhilarating feeling.
It is.
It's unbelievable. It's what the game is all about.
It is, yes.
And I can understand why somebody's trying to reach in and try to grab it. I mean, we had that issue last year with Spokane, with all their fans, and hell, their head coach, which had fan interference during games.
Yeah,
and
don't
it's because,
me, yeah.
because it's exciting.
I think I mentioned it before, possibly as early as last week. I think if any game is televised locally, if it's on television, if it could be seen across the nation, because you do have some of the games that are on, the Comcast sports networks, you have them on some of the Fox sports networks, you can have instant replay.
I think you could have it anywhere. I don't think you need to do that. Every single arena has in-house video, and you just do it there. All you have to do is set up a PL line for audio into the control room, which is one line, takes 5 minutes to set up, and you put one monitor there, and all they have to do is get on the horn with it, because everything stopped anyway.
Yeah.
In the arena. And guess what? You have the cheerleaders go out and dance, you do a little, a little promotion where they're throwing balls up against the net, or you throw some t-shirts in the crowd, and the referee just says, "Hey, let me see all the angles you have. Okay, do you have any others? No, thank you. I made my decision. You go out there. The play has been overturned." It's that simple. The league's like, "Oh, it takes this, no." And guess what? After the game, and there's always a league official at most games, if there's a replay, because guess what? Every one of those, if they have 5 cameras, they know ahead of time there's 5 cameras that are taping the entire game. So the league gets, after every game, the league gets a copy of each one of those. If they go through and the referees say, "Oh, I didn't see," the refs before the game know there's 5 different cameras.
Yeah.
"I want to see all 5 cameras. Okay, well, one of the cameras were on the cheerleaders. Okay, skip that one. Let's go to the next one. And you have 90 seconds. You can see 5 angles of something in 90 seconds.
Yeah.
And most of them are all going to be from the either the high end zone or right from the 25-yard line. And that's it. It's so simple. I mean, I work in TV. This is nothing. And the league makes such a big deal about it.
Now, the league...
Because last year, Orlando would have been in the Arena Bowl if that was allowed. Because I'm at that game. Tampa Bay wins it. At the end of the game, there's a touchdown that's scored by Scipio. But he got knocked out, and they called it incomplete. Scipio is looking at, you know, grabbing his backside and, like, looking at Pat O'Hare, like, throw the flag, you know? And he's like, it's not on TV. I could read his lips.
We don't have it.
That's your championship game.
Wow. No, something has to be done. I still am pushing for, and I hope that the league does it, is the goal line cam. Something.
Yeah.
I think there needs to be a goal, and I don't understand why, with the past history that they have had with the issues with the goal line, why the league did not ask for the NFL Network to have a goal line cam. And you've had games this year where it could have gone either way. A call went either way because there was no goal line cam. So, wish list for 2012? 2013? 2015?
Hopefully.
Yeah, hopefully. You know, what we're going to do is we're going to go ahead and go to this week's previews, and then we will go to our last segment, which is the Hall of Fame finalists. So week 16 previews are brought to you by thefindout.com for tricks, tips, and hidden treasures the internet has to offer. Go to thefindout.com. It's something worth sharing. Only one Friday game this week, Andy. It is NFL Network. It is now the J.J. Raderink-less Kansas City Command going into Utah. Tommy Grady coming off another 10 touchdown passing game. You remember we were saying last week that Pittsburgh, I thought Pittsburgh was going to beat Utah, but they ended up getting blown out by Utah.
I said that Tom Grady was going to be on fire.
Yep.
I believe.
Yep. I should have gone with the Utah and their great home record. Totally surprised me out of the blue with them doing this, but Utah's at home versus Kansas City. Kansas City basically having a quarterback, you know, Wazzle. Now they're going to be their default starter. I'm going to go back and give Utah this game at home, just based on the fact of they are better at home than they are on the road.
Well, I have to completely agree. You know, as my articles say, I mean, this is, you know, week after week, I'm giving Tommy Grady award after award, kind of like I did last year with Rod Windsor. And, you know, he doesn't disappoint. And, you know, when that team is on fire like they were last week, they are the best in the business. And I know I've said it on this show, and I've also said it in my thing. If one of these crappy teams this year, name it, Kansas City, you know, Georgia. No, Georgia's not that way. But, you know, any of these teams that are really, really bad, like maybe New Orleans, mm-hmm. they need to call Matt Sock the second the season is over and says, hey, we want you to be head coach. Can you bring Tommy Grady with you? That's how you say it.
Yeah.
Can you bring Tommy Grady? And because they give you that Dan Arbeck can be a part owner, you say, hey, with 2 years, if we win an Arena Bowl, we'll give you 5% of the team.
Interesting.
Do something like that, you know? I mean, Tim Markham owned 10% of the Storm at one point.
Yeah.
So, you know, Tommy Grady, this week, you know, he's going to pass 100 touchdowns. He's going to pass 4,000 yards, which both of which are, you know, on pace for being some of the fastest ever. You know, earlier you were talking about the records of going to be broken because of 18-game season.
Right.
I really would love to see the Arena League, as well as the NFL and all major sports, next to all their records, do per-game averages. Just on certain things.
Yeah.
Like passing yards. Because, like Tommy Grady, even though he's going to shatter the passing yardage mark, passing yards per game, no, he's not. He's not even in the top five. So if somebody else during that time would have played 18 games, they would have had even more yards. And it'd be a nice conversational piece to say, wow, there were some impressive things back in 2002 when, you know, Aaron Garcia had the same amount of touchdowns per game that Tommy Grady had. Because, you know, the league is has changed, you know, over time. You could have seen it if you could have got Aaron Garcia in his prime, he could have maybe had 150 touchdowns this year.
Yeah.
You know, which, unbelievable kind of numbers. But, yeah, I'm going to go with
Utah
on it. And, you know, in my article this last week, I talk about the battle for fourth place in the National with Spokane, Tulsa, Utah. And I still throw San Jose in there because it is San Jose, and you got to respect what Darren Arbett's done over the years. And, you know, I look at it, and I'm thinking it's Tulsa or it's going to be Utah in that final spot. I know we're going to talk about Tulsa playing Dallas in a little bit. But I think that because of that win that I think is going to happen with Utah is going to have that four spot, you know, entering week 17 next week.
Yeah. Great Southern Division matchup. Our first game on Saturday, Jacksonville. I think you mentioned it is the longest current streak in regular season Arena League history at 12. If I'm not, correct me if I'm wrong.
Yep, they tied San Jose from 2002.
Yep, they play Tampa Bay, Tampa Bay team that I will admit they did not play badly at all versus Orlando last week. As I said, came down on probably one or two calls with the refs itself, but either way, Tampa Bay did get the win. They won by two in the Warren I-4. You know, brought it back up to 24 wins each in the series. Who would have thought? Who would have thought after all these years? Tampa Bay is going to have to have a perfect game in order to win this one, in my opinion. I really think Jacksonville is on a pace to where they could possibly run the gambit in the regular season. But I do know that, you know, could a loss help the Sharks? Sure. Sure. I think that it could, but I think they're really motivated now, especially with owning the best record in the league and so on. But Jacksonville still, I think, will win this game, no matter how close some of these games have been recently. Up until last week, I think they finally got it off the snide with being able to smoke Milwaukee the way they did. But I see Jacksonville winning this one.
Well, you know, the last time these two teams played, Tampa Bay was up 14-0 to start the game.
That's right.
And going into the second half, Tampa was right there as well. And then you had Jacksonville scoring three touchdowns to end the game to make it a 24-point victory. So it was a lot closer because, you know, Tampa, their last possessions were fumbled, turnover and downs. And, you know, you have a different quarterback this time. And I don't know. I really don't know. I mean, I really was impressed with Tampa Bay last week. But I wasn't impressed in their second half performance. Their first half, they were dominant. They owned that game. And, you know, then they just dropped off in that second half. So I don't know. I mean, you know, if you have, you know, the Tampa Bay these are the two best sack teams in the league. They're going to go down as the two best in the league's history this year. They're number one and number two. You know, you have a Cliff Dukes who you know, is going to break the sack yardage mark this year. And then last week, I mean, you got a guy who had 4.5 sacks. So, I mean, if they can get to Aaron Garcia, it could be a very interesting game. I'll go homer on this one, and I'll say Tampa Bay.
Just a stat of note. Since these two teams started meeting each other last year, Jacksonville leads the overall series 3-0.
Yep. And you know that's gotta have a bad taste. That's a long 4.5-hour drive back home to Tampa.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, these two teams, you know, I think having an extra team in Florida, I think it's a lot. It's good for the rivalry between these teams. Cleveland needs to win basically to keep pace with Pittsburgh, no matter what, either way, with whatever the outcome is currently, you know, this week. Kansas City pulling off the upset over the Gladiators this past Sunday, so it's going to be a short week for them, so to speak. San Jose, though, is coming into town, team that has lost six straight, team that has never lost this many games in a row in team history. I think if any games that we could say that San Jose does actually have a chance to win this game, I would say it would be this one. I think they have a very good chance at beating Cleveland. I am actually going to give San Jose a slight edge in this one.
I'm going to give them more than a slight edge. You know, San Jose has always had its way with Stevie Tone coach teams. Last time they played each other, you know, Grand Rapids became the little darlings of the league, you know, going from a 6-10 team, winning a couple playoff games. They came to San Jose. San Jose destroyed them, 81-55. And I don't see it not happening again. One thing that happened that was last week was that San Jose brought in Dan Looney, who was their, you know, all arena center back in 2008. His first game back, he had a couple missed snaps, one of which was a lost fumble that really had a momentum turner against Arizona. You take that away, and you take the other one away, that, you know, you lose it down. You lose it down. You might lose a yard or two with it too. And it takes away a little motivation. You take away those, they beat Arizona, who, I don't care what these little stupid polls say, Arizona's best team in the league. They have two losses by a combined 2 points. They've dominated every team they played, essentially.
It's true.
They have a plus 25 turnover differential. That's the best in, like, any sports history. So they are the best team. I don't care what they say about Jacksonville. And guess what? They beat Jacksonville.
That's true. They did.
So until Jacksonville beats them, they're going to be my vote. And they almost beat Arizona. I think that the stuff's going to change. I mean, you look at San Jose's rest of their schedule. They have Cleveland. I think they're going to beat. They're home against Jacksonville, which we'll see what happens this week with Jacksonville.
Mm-hmm.
They play Orlando, who's been iffy lately. They have another game against Spokane, which they dominated earlier in the year. And then they go to Tampa Bay. So, yes, they're at 5-8 right now, but it's a four-way split for that last thing. And on record, San Jose does have the worst strength, I mean, the best strength of schedule. So they played the toughest teams remaining. But I think that they're going to have a good chance to go 4-1 in those games.
Nice. I know you were mentioning too, Steve Tunn overall versus San Jose, 1-6 in his coaching career. That's very telling.
it is very telling, and you know, if they can't score, I mean Stevie Tunn, I mean, it's happened this year. If they're not scoring, they are flat. They are absolutely flat, and you know, you also have a Ben Nelson who knows that system from last year, who's going to be telling Darren Arbette everything that's going to be run.
Good point. Yeah.
So I mean, it's going to be interesting. I think that San Jose gets off of the slide, and I actually think they're going to beat Jacksonville next week too.
Wow, you heard it here.
Mm-hmm.
You heard it here. Arizona, Philadelphia. Arizona is currently the top seed and is the only team that has clinched a playoff spot so far in the Arena Football League. Goes into Philadelphia. A Philadelphia team that, I don't know, you know, this team, there's so many Jekyll and Hyde teams this year, Andy. I swear, I don't know. This is a team that loses to Tulsa last week. All Good, basically, in his return, basically gives them, you know, we're talking about Jon Bon Jovi. All Good gives this soul the middle finger, I think, this week. And the Brandon Kirsch experiment, well, Ryan Vina came in. he didn't have any interceptions, so I don't know where this is going to go.
I mean, every time Ryan Vina comes in off the bench, he is outstanding. He is, the entire year. So I think you start the other guy for like two series, for like a the first snap, and then you'd be like, oh, you suck, get out. Dana goes in there. And then he could actually maybe be competitive in this game. But I just don't see it. Arizona's just going to take this. And I think one thing that you saw last week with Arizona is they proved that they didn't have to go to Rod Windsor. They spread it around. They gave it to Jason Gathers, who had a great Ironman performance, though the league didn't honor him. They decided to honor a guy who only played defense and kick, you know, was a kick returner.
Yeah, I know.
Which is a consistent thing. Well, you saw my article.
Yeah,
I did. I'm very upset. I think you should get rid of it. I mean, it's not a real award if you're going to give it to a guy who plays one way and then special teams. If you're going to do that, then just the NFL should just give it to Devin Hester every single time.
Yeah.
That's like saying that during interleague play that Mariano Rivera goes up and bats, that he's an Iron Man because he's always a pitcher, and now he's going to be on offense.
Good analogy, but you remember it depends on what park they're playing in.
No, interleague play and at the other park.
Oh, okay. At the National League park. Yeah. Okay, I see what you're saying.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, he came to San Francisco.
Okay, I see what you're saying.
He wasn't in Oakland.
Okay, I see what you're saying.
And it was the bottom of the ninth, obviously. Yeah. You know.
But yeah, same thing. I gave Arizona a win on this one. I don't see any questions about this one. Next game, though, not so much. Pittsburgh, Milwaukee. Milwaukee did hang in with Jacksonville. I think the outcome will be this week, and it would be who's going to start for the Power. The Power had a piss poor outing last week versus Utah. And mind you, they did lose Morris. And they had to go with Chris Wallace and Kevin McCabe. Am I not thinking something? I guess Morris didn't. Okay, I'm not. I was thinking that Morris either. So I guess Morris not playing hurt them. No interceptions though. But I think it depends on who starts. I think if Morris starts this week for Pittsburgh, they'll win this one. If not, could be a little bit closer, though.
You know, both these teams are kind of, you know, Milwaukee obviously not having Chris Grison this year is just, you know, they're just walking in the desert. I mean, they just really are. I mean, 2 weeks in a row, I mean, I didn't see the game, so I don't know if Harrell actually played, but they're listed as a starter both games, and he didn't do anything. He didn't even have a catch in the last two games. And if you can't get, you know, your premier guy, even though I know that he's on the tail end of his career, you can't get him the ball, something's wrong.
Yeah.
And, you know, the last 2 weeks for Pittsburgh, you know, I mean, they were on a four-game winning streak. They were looking great. All of a sudden they hit Tampa and, you know, they hit Utah. But, you know, they're back home now. So I mean, I would say that I don't care who starts it, that Pittsburgh's gonna take this. They need it because, you know, they just have to try to, you know, stay with Cleveland. And you know, you're looking at it, they're all both about playing about the same time, 30 minutes apart, so they're not gonna really know, you know, what's happening in Cleveland. But
well, the thing, though, too, is at the moment is that, remember, Pittsburgh owns the tiebreaker over the Gladiators.
Yeah.
Pittsburgh is currently the second seed, which leads me into the next game. Georgia now owns, it has jumped Cleveland, and according to the league and from what you wrote, too, in your article, Georgia is now the fourth seed in the league. So now Georgia is in a playoff spot. Georgia's playing Orlando this week, so this is an even bigger game because, if I'm not mistaken, Orlando is also in a playoff hunt too. So I don't know. I going with Orlando being at home, Georgia. Unfortunately, I think Georgia's going to drop out of the playoff spot, and I think Orlando's going to take a little bit more of an advantage this one. I think Orlando is going to win this one. Considering what happened to them last week in that last second.
Well, I mean, you're looking though the last two games for Orlando. I mean, they were 8-3 entering the game against Jacksonville. They lose it by a point. Then they lose to Tampa by 2 points. Now, they did play Georgia earlier in the year, they did just beat them by five. You know, I really like Georgia after seeing them here in San Jose. You know, they're a very elusive team because of their receiving core. They're just fast, and they take the ball, and they really go. But going against a secondary as strong as Orlando's, I don't think that those shifty kind of guys are going to be able to take it, those short passes, and take them as the distance that they've done before to all these other teams.
Yeah.
And for that reason, and that reason alone, I always have to say Orlando. That is the case, you know.
Mm-hmm.
If Nick Hill, you know, decides that he wants to make his Ryan Vina impersonation and throw a couple more picks like he seemingly does at this tail end of the season.
Yeah, and by the way, if Georgia does win, it's very possible that they, if I'm not mistaken, but just by looking at the records, Georgia would leapfrog Orlando and become the number three seed. I think, from what I'm seeing here.
Well, and you know, if they do win, look at the end of the game. They will be trying to go for two. They will be trying to go for a field goal. They won't be sitting on the clock if they are down by anything more than 4 points.
Yes.
Because they want to have that head-to-head tiebreaker with points.
Yeah. Spokane, New Orleans. I don't think we need to spend much time on this one, Andy.
It's New Orleans. If I was starting at quarterback, it would probably be the same final score as it is this week.
Yeah. That Spokane, no matter how, where they're coming from, Spokane.
You know, I respect Raymond Filia as their offensive coordinator. I know he came in later in the season, and he's actually given them a little spark offensively. But I feel so bad for him because he really knows the game, and being on that team is not helping him.
No.
You know, maybe when they can Stingley after the end of the year, you know, maybe if they can get Filia, you know, I think that he has a mind to do it, kind of like Dallas, you know, with Clint, who, you know, or, you know, looking at Utah with Matt. I mean, and they've proved these are, you know, good quarterbacks in their day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, obviously Matt only really had the opportunity in the AF2, and he was an AF2 Hall of Famer. So, I mean, he knows the game. I know him very well. He really, really knows what he's doing, and there's no doubt he'll be a coach in the league next year, a head coach in this league. And I think Raymond Filia does have a future as an offensive coordinator. I just really feel bad that he's on that team. Like, I really, really feel bad for P.J. Barry.
Yeah, I totally agree with you on that one.
P.J. Barry needs to just take the drive to Dallas. Just be like, please take me.
Yeah. Speaking of Dallas, and you were mentioning it before, Tulsa hosts Dallas this weekend. Dallas currently holds the number three spot in the National Conference playoff race, with Spokane and Tulsa nipping at the Vigilantes' tails, along with Utah. Actually, Utah's now in as a four spot. Oh, really? They're now in as a four spot. I hadn't seen that.
They've switched it now. Utah is the four spot?
According to the league right now, when I'm looking at on their webpage, Arizona would host Utah.
They keep on changing things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know, because I think who'd you have listed?
I had Tulsa, because that's what they had. I didn't really break it down, because I was like, okay, well, yeah, I trust the league has the correct stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll be actually changing that on the website as we talk.
Yep, they have a Tulsa just on the verge. So it's either way, you got Tulsa nipping at the tails of the Vigilantes. This could be
that'll change, because Utah will move in that spot for next week.
Yeah, it could be a very, very interesting game, though, nonetheless, this week for Tulsa and Dallas. But you know, it's sort of a game. You know, Tulsa happened to lead the series 2-1. Overall, Dallas did win earlier this year by 24 points. It was a different quarterback. I'm actually going to give Tulsa a little bit of an advantage in this game, just being the fact that, you know, this Tulsa team does seem to be just revitalized by the return of Justin Allgood. But I think the only thing that the Tulsa has to do in order to ensure this win is stop Dallas's running game, which is going to be very hard to do.
True. I mean, I think Dallas is – this game is going to be – is my kind of like, you know,
game of
I don't
week.
Know. Yeah, because you're looking at, I think the game of the week is Tampa, Jacksonville.
Yeah.
But with this game, what Tulsa has done now that Justin Allgood's been there for the last 3 weeks is, I mean, they almost beat a Chicago, a really, really good Chicago team at the time, and they've had two great wins the last week, last 2 weeks. He's got 12 touchdowns and no interceptions in these two games, and I think it's a completely different. I'm going to go with Tulsa on it, and I don't care what Derek Ross does in this game. He can run for 150 yards. I think they're still going to. It's going to end up being that because I think some momentum has really changed.
Uh-huh.
Mitch Ulner has got his groove back, and Tulsa is going to, you know, is going to beat them this week.
And last but not least, we have another Sunday afternoon matchup for the Chicago Rush. Chicago is going to be hosting Iowa in a could be a very interesting game. Just because of the uncertainty of how J.J. Raddering could play in this game, and it seems to be right now the two-headed monster, quarterback monster that currently is playing, you know, with Lee Ladowski and with Banks. I can't believe I'm saying this, but because of the uncertainty, more uncertainty I think right now in Chicago with the quarterback situation in Raderink, I'm actually going to give, I can't believe I said, I'm going to give Iowa a slight advantage in this one.
Well, depending on what happens, assuming that Raderink is going to be the starter, the last time that he played earlier this year against Iowa, he had 4 turnovers. And, you know, he had 3 interceptions. He lost a fumble. He did throw 7 touchdowns. And his team won. So, you know, if he can eliminate those, which is, I think, the real reason he got canned and got traded to Chicago was because he turns over the ball.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Kansas City actually probably would have a better record this year than they do. If it wasn't for, you know, his mistakes, even though I think he's a good quarterback. I think he can do what he can do, but it's just he turns the ball over a lot.
Yeah.
And, I mean, 4 turnovers and you still win the game. I mean, I know Iowa and Kansas City were not the greatest teams in the world, but.
Well, Brad Banks had one of his – he actually played the entire game last week. You know, he threw for 363 yards. He threw for 110 more yards than Dan Radebaugh. So, it could be very interesting. I think if Brad Banks has another one of these games, I think Iowa is going to pull this one out. Either way, interesting games. You know, we have the entire playoff race is really starting to come together. So, we could have some teams. I think can Jacksonville clinch a playoff spot this week? I think they can. If I think 3 games up, I think they can clinch a playoff spot this week with a win. Or an Orlando loss. I wish the league would have the scenarios up like they've had before in the past, but it's like maybe they'll release something in a couple of days tomorrow. I don't know.
Well, they already changed the 4 seed too in the playoffs this week, so that's something.
I know. Last but not least, as everybody knows, this past Friday Night Football, they released the nominees for the 2011 Arena Football League Hall of Fame class. 2011. I think I said 2011 twice. Anyways, first and foremost, you as fans can go to the league site. That is arenafootball.com. As long as you're signed up, you can vote once a day for one player of your choice. It could be the same player every day, like Andy has done, or it could be for multiple players which you want to see get in, like I have done. But either way, It came down to, and these were the finalists themselves, Dan Arbett, San Jose head coach, Sylvester Bembry, Eddie Brown, Hunky Cooper, Sam Hernandez, George LaFrance, Gene Nudo, Stevie Thomas, Barry Wagner, and Kurt Warner. Now, I know everybody can read your article on arenafan.com.
Yeah, I got 9 out of 10.
Yeah.
I actually had all 10 of 10, and then I went player. I had Nudo in there, and You know, I should have just went with the gut, but I didn't do it.
Now, would you call anybody, and I noticed that you're almost dead on, and I don't think you've actually ever mentioned this, but being who they announced, would you call any of them a surprise? I know we went through last week.
No, okay. Absolutely not.
Okay.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. All 10 are you know, right there. Like I said, mine was between Randy Gatewood and Gene Nudo. Mm-hmm. And just because the player list is so strong, I was like, okay, at the very least, let's do this. The league, on the other hand, they went with Gene, which I fear that since only 5 of these 10 guys are going to get in, that you're going to see like a Gene get into the Hall, very deserving, but because of the backlog of players and what, you know, if you read my 2011 HOF finalist revisited, you'll see that I feel that one of these players is not going to get in because the league has a tendency to vote in a lot of executives. You got almost 40% of the current people that are in there are executives. And this sport is not really made by executives. You know, if you look at it and you're like, okay, there's 2 owners in there, none of those are involved in the Arena Football League. None of them were involved in the Arena Football League in over the last decade. Mm-hmm. And they still are in there. And Gene definitely is a deserving candidate, as is Darren Arbett. But just this year, it should be all players. In fact, I think the next 2 to 3 years should all be players. And in mine this year, Wagner, LaFrance, Brown, Thomas, and Cooper in that order. I think that's a no-brainer. I think for all three, personally, that it's a no-brainer because of the careers they had.
Yes.
You know, but I'm voting every day for Stevie Thomas because I fear that the league's going to put in Wagner, LaFrance, Brown, and Cooper. I think the Cooper gets more votes because the people that are voting, the weighted votes, are going to be on the current Hall of Famers as well as the people that are in these committees. And there's a lot of people in those committees that have a lot more ties to, say, Arizona. As far as Hall of Famers, more of them know all about Thomas. And
right,
so I think that's going to be there. There's also the fact that Kurt Warner's there. Now, from what I've gathered from some sources is that Warner didn't have as much support for the top 10 that got voted in on, but if you look at it, you can see exactly why.
Yeah.
Because of the 20 greatest players, you have to go in order or the league looks like a joke.
Yeah.
If you allow one player who's not in that top 20 in before you allow everyone else, which happens next year when Clint Ozell's available, and he doesn't get nominated because you have to go in that order, that's going to be really, really weird. Really, really weird. The last guy, player-wise, is number 2, is Kurt Warner. So if you go with the 8th player that's eligible, that's Kurt Warner.
Yeah.
The 9th player that's eligible, you know, is another guy. So it's like there's nobody that's on there that gets there.
Do you see a dark horse?
No, I mean, I think the only dark horses that really are there are really going to be either a Nudo, an Arbett, or a Warner.
Okay.
If not, I think it's going to be Wagner, LaFrance, Brown, Thomas, and Cooper. And in my article, I talk at length why I take Stevie Thomas over Hunky Cooper. And I think I make a great case on it because in sports, the only thing that truly, truly matters is winning. And nobody was like Stevie Thomas and what he did. I mean, the league had their 20 greatest games, and he was either the MVP or the Iron Man of 5 of those games. Every other player that's eligible this year doesn't have more than 2.
Right.
And that's Wagner has 2 that, and he wasn't MVP. He was Iron Man for most of those. So it's like you have this, including the, you know, the top 2 games. He has the greatest play in the league's history, which is also the only play that in the greatest moments in league history that they did in the first 20 years is listed. It's actually one play is listed. It's his play. How can you not get him in over a player like Hunky Cooper?
Yeah.
Now, Hunky Cooper was fantastic, but when it came to the Arena Bowl, he was no Stevie Thomas. And I break it down on there why I go that way. Now, that being said, next year is going to be an even bigger class. I mean, you got a class
thinking,
next year.
I'm thinking too. Yeah, they'll have to expand it in order to get some of these other
players
in.
Well, I think the 5 is just stupid. And I keep on saying it on here that 5 is just dumb. It should be 7. You know, and then you can have other people in there. If you put 7 in there, that means you can put an Arbet in there. You know, you can put a Nudo in there. Mm-hmm. Because at this rate, Nudo should never get in. And that's horrible. Because it should be about all these players at some time. So, but if you look at it, say my 5, the 5 that I say get in, you know, you have next year that are almost automatic top 10 qualifiers of Arbet, Bembry, Hernandez, Nudo, and Warner.
Mm-hmm.
So there's 5 others that are going to get in. Next year, your eligibility becomes Cedric Bonner, who's part of the top 20.
Yep.
James Barron, who's top of the 20. You also have other top 20 guys, such as Randy Gatewood, Greg Hopkins, Corey Fleming, and Bob McMillan, that are also top 20. Then you get players that are now are retired in the 2008 season, which is a massive amount because none of those guys came back in 2010, which include Clint Dozell, a Chris Jackson, and you know, you could also put a Kyle Moore Brown. He might not get as much support. He was great, but you know, he didn't get a lot of stats, and some people didn't get to see really what he did, but he's definitely Hall of Fame worthy in the future. And, you know, then you have other players that aren't part of that huge I know who you are kind of class, like Andre Bowden, who I will take every single day over Bob McMillan. No offense to Bob McMillan, and I pointed out in articles why I would take him over Bob.
What about a Dan Alexander?
No.
Just to throw out a name. What about an Al Lucas?
No. I actually wrote, when I did this, an Al Lucas piece. And yes, Al Lucas was barely eligible. I mean, because you have to see what's on the field, not just what happened to him at the end of his career. I have to say no. I mean, it's sad, and you say it like that, you know, because it is the Hall of Fame. These are the greatest players, coaches, administrators, everything that happened. It was a sad, tragic thing that happened to him. It's horrible. Horrible, the most horrible thing that could happen. I mean, I feel so bad for what happened to Casey Wasserman and John Tominaha on that day when they had to do that. I remember we did a crisis management that John Tominaha, who was the Avengers PR director,
right,
asset to this league. The league should pay whatever they could to get him back. And it was a clinic on how to do things. And I, like, almost cried what he did because he was just – it was everything was right, and I was like, I don't know if I could have done that. I don't know if pretty much anyone could have done that. I mean, you know, because what he did that day, but if you look at Al Lucas's career, it just wasn't in the class that you could have with a Sam Hernandez. Could it have been? Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe it was starting off that way, and I mean, I have it written. I have it actually written, but I was like, I'm not going to put this in there because I don't want to tarnish, you know, Al Lucas and tarnish that. But yes, you know, you mentioned it, so that's the only reason I'm saying it.
I think if anything,
I wouldn't put him there because of that. He has an award named after him, and he has the best award named after him for what it is. And
the league. I
hope the league actually goes back to it. I don't think they did it last year.
They haven't done it for a while. Thank you. I was just about to say the exact same thing. The league needs to go back and to.
Well, they did it in 08, and Mike Brown from Philadelphia won it that year. And, I mean, it's a community award, and that's what this league's really, truly about. The Lucas Award is a fantastic award, and you'll see, I mean, this league is all about the fans, and it's all about the community, and it's a perfect award to be named after him, because he was very, very active himself, and if you've ever seen the trophy, it's fantastic. It really, really does a lot, and his family was great. I mean, I remember being at the Arena Ball Awards when they renamed it, and it was very very moving, and his whole family was there, and but I just don't know about putting him into the hall. If the league in the league and eventually if they actually have a physical hall one day, I mean, I would love to see it in Tampa, like I've said before, or even in maybe like an Iowa, or even make it a moving thing, like in a semi, and it goes around the, you know, for, you know, the league every week, and people could pick up the trophies and all the things that they've had and do things. Maybe there could be something in there about him and you know, maybe something about injuries and...
Yeah, that would be cool, though.
That things like that.
Yeah, I agree.
Learn about it because, I mean, it's a tough sport. I mean, I remember when I was a kid and the Storm actually had a little dasher board and, you know, fake grass all set up and kids could, like, kind of, like, you know, hit your shoulders into it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it hurt. So, I mean, it kind of it shows that this game is very, very tough. The wall doesn't stop.
No. I agree with you. I think they need to bring back the Al Lucas Award. But I'm going to actually agree with you. I don't think he should be in the Hall of Fame. But I think he should still be recognized for his community service. So I hope that the league does bring back the award and start awarding it again because it's a very well-deserved award. It was a very interesting week coming up this week in the AFL. Interesting games. You have a chance. Try to watch as many of them as you can, whether it be on Nifty or on your local television, because I think all the games are going to be broadcast somehow in one shape or another on television, whether it be local or on Nifty TV. If there are any ways you want to contact us in the future, you can do so. Have any ideas? There is the Twitter account, and there's Facebook. It is /ArenaFan, and there is also email. Contact me at tim.capper@arenafan.com, and for Andy, it is andy.lobuchnek@arenafan.com. Andy, again, I want to thank you for filling in for Adam while he is away. I know that we had some great shows last year. You're very, very knowledgeable, as I've said, I'm sure, many a time already.
I love this sport.
Yeah, and again, if we can have you on again, it'll be my pleasure to have you.
Fantastic.
Right. Well, for everybody here at the AFL Tonight family and at the studios, for Andy Lipischnack, I'm Tim Capper. Watch the rebound off the net.